And up through now, we have been the nonprofits. The name will be changing starting in 2 weeks to Three Assholes Without Chilling to Carry Their Dead Weight Around. The Nonprofits is an internet audio program, bi-weekly, sponsored by the Atheist Community of Austin, a 501c3 educational corporation devoted to the promotion of positive atheism and the separation of church and state. We do a weekly happy hour Thursday evenings at 7 p.m. at the Dog and Duck Pub, and Sunday morning meetings at Romeo's at 11 in the morning, except for the first Sunday of each month when we have a lecture series. The next lecture, I believe, will be an internal debate amongst ACA members. We currently do the TV show from Matt Dillahunty International Studio, Matt's apartment. And the after-show dinner is now at Pluckers. And, yeah, I got nothing.
Okay. So,
cool.
So here's what we did. Today's Schilling's last show for at least for a while, although there, I haven't actually talked to him about this, but since Skype's working so well, there may be a chance that, plus we have the telephone hybrid, so we may not be three assholes who don't have Schilling around to carry our dead weight.
Or we may be.
We may be. But also, there's somebody else who expressed an interest in giving the show a shot. For some reason, my mic sounds funny. But anyway, Kathleen is going to stop by for the July 18th show, which incidentally will be the next nonprofit show.
July 18th?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Okay.
The reason for that is that the next show would actually fall while I'm in Vegas.
Right. We can't have that.
And, yeah, you can't do a show from Dillahunty International Studios if I'm not here.
Yeah. Well, if you had sufficient internet connection, you could do a show from Vegas.
Well, I'm not making any promises about what I do or don't do in Vegas, because what happens in Vegas might stay there.
In Vegas.
I may not do much of anything. I mean, after all, you know, it's been a few months since my girlfriend and I were actually in the same place. So, you know, when you put together a skeptics conference and a bunch of other stuff and the opportunity for...
You're not going to have time.
I'm probably not going to get a lot done.
No.
But I'm going to try.
Have a great time. Isn't
and there's a friend who's bringing an HD camera, and I'm bringing some recording equipment. It's not like I'm packing up the studio or anything. And we'll see about getting some interviews with whoever we can get them with. I really don't know for sure what's going to happen, so stay tuned. And then Kathleen will be sitting in on July 18th, and we'll see how that goes and what we do. But Dennis had been so busy.
Yeah. Well, plus lazy, but...
It's a brew that
results in things not getting done.
He was going to do something that I consider to be very brave. he was going to use an old introduction from the nonprofits. And instead we said, nah, let's Schilling do it.
Yeah, with about 30 seconds advance notice.
Yeah,
hence,
yeah, literally.
What was cool is Schilling got to rattle off the actual numbers of the for the nonprofit status for
501c3.
The 501c stuff. That was great, man. I need that.
But I completely
missed
all
so
the you know
beautifully
names.
It doesn't matter. You had 30 seconds to ad lib an intro for what's going to be your final show for a while.
That sucked. That was great.
If we're vain enough, we'll say our own names when we feel it appropriate.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I saw a video that I'm not going to actually direct people to because it would be very self-serving. But what somebody had done at one point was taken a clip from nonprofits and then put Dennis's face, my face, Schilling's face, Russell's face, and then faded them out
that
in and out.
Is, yeah, don't worry, it's fucking creepy to me, just because that thing always is.
It was basically based on who was talking.
It is an outstanding way. Yeah, and so if someone was making like a side comment talking over someone a bit, it faded it in about 40%. And it is a really nice way to do the video, and I imagine it took a lot of work. And because, you know, especially for people who don't quite recognize everybody's voice.
Yeah.
Because, you know,
that's funny.
All of us atheists sound the same.
Oh, and a clip of us talking about the Tony String of Fucking Numbers guy who killed the girl. The crazy YouTube video guy who...
What?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That video, I'm seeing fucking everywhere. It's just a video of like it has video of him and her and shit like that, but it's a clip from nonprofits. Someone actually emailed it to me saying, hey, I think you'd like this. That's not weird. Realizing.
Cool. What? Well, to the guy who did the one with the faces fading in and out, while I'm not, you know, it did make it very easy, I could say, for somebody who didn't know who was talking to at least put, you know, faces with voices. So I'm Matt Dillahunty.
I wonder what ugly faces he picked out. I'm Dennis Lube.
And I'm Russell Glasser.
Shulin.
And Thad just punked you all. Russell's not here today. Yeah, we don't know why.
Yeah, we do.
He's driving someone to Austin.
I thought that's what he did last show.
Nope.
No, he was here last show.
He was here last time.
Yeah. Russell was here last show?
He told us he was going to miss this show at the time.
Wow. Okay. Right. I apologize. I've been working ridiculous amounts, and so my brain's not
here. It's brave how you're battling this brain problem.
Well, let's take a moment and not pray for them to have a safe trip.
Wait, that sounds just horribly wrong.
I know.
It makes perfect sense.
There was a time in high school.
It just sounds wrong.
I dated a Baptist girl for a while. Before I dated her, she was dating a friend of mine, and they had this date planned. But then something happened with, like, she was in orchestra at the time, and this quartet was coming down to do a class that she had to miss. And she said, well, Jesus, why can't they just die? And they got into a car accident on the way down. And she was very religious, so the fact that she said, Jesus, why can't they just die?
Oh. Well, yeah, she was just asking a question.
Yeah, yeah.
Not say anything. It's not an imprecatory prayer.
I've got a weird somebody breathing into a mic.
I wonder if it's me.
I don't know. I don't hear it.
Maybe
now.
It's the
everybody's holding
air
their breath.
Conditioner.
Yeah.
But so
was that a moment of silence?
That was enough.
Okay.
So anything newsworthy happen? Because I mean, I haven't done anything. So
not much theistically.
Well, I'd like to stick with, you know, the subjects that are relevant and not spend any time on people who've died recently.
Yeah. Okay. Well, gosh, let's see. I go to my computer, 2009, go to the thing.
We have a massive backlog of reader mail.
Yes,
we
do.
I have
to go back an episode to find all that
stuff.
Yeah,
I have like 280 in my inbox right now I've already weeded out the ones that other people have replied to. So
right.
These are just the ones that haven't gotten a reply at all yet. So, yeah, worst case, we could just do mail.
We appreciate your mail, but don't feel bad if you don't get a response.
I'll take a look while Dennis is doing this. We apologize for the incredibly lame.
Yeah, I was. I wasn't set up.
Show that we're not really doing.
Yeah.
Well,
right. Way to send me off with a fizzle.
Yeah.
In the way of news. Here's a weird one, and I don't know how we'll address this. It clergy appeal over organ donors. In the UK, the leaders of the UK's main religion have appealed to their followers to support a campaign to register as organ donors. They are trying to counter uncertainty about what their religion teaches about organ donation. The Roman Catholic Archbishop of Westminster, the head of the Muslim Council of Britain, and the chief rabbi are among those involved. It's an act of generosity. They're doing a good thing, but why didn't people already know what their religion had to say about organ donation? They've had 2,000 years to get the message out about what the religion says about organ donation.
But the Bible doesn't say anything specific about it, unless it's for the purpose of sacrifice.
Well, and how long have you been able to sign up for an organ donor is another factor.
Well, sure.
But it's just one of those things where, you know, it's, I would imagine, not a priority for the church. And so they never really address it because they probably never feel the need to. And people are
weird
about it.
But aren't they supposed to be charitable and generous?
Yeah, but you're asking for them to think for themselves, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of people really do want their religion to tell them just about everything.
Right. Tell them what to do.
I mean, organ donations is the kind of thing that very few people think about.
Yeah.
I mean, we want to do something charitable. Well, let's feed people, clothe people, you know.
Sure.
There are a lot of things that come to mind. Let's tell them to sign up to donate organs. That's just something you don't often think of. So I can't say I would really fault them for taking a long time to do it. Because it's not like there was opposition or anything like that. It's more of a, oh, shit, yeah, we've kind of dropped the ball on this.
Right.
But it would suck, though, if, you know, let's say you donate your eyes or something like that, and you get to heaven, everyone's naked, you're blind.
Yeah. Well, I wonder how many organs weren't donated because they didn't make this clear earlier.
And because some people...
A lot,
because they thought that their religion forbid it.
I don't think many people are under the impression...
Jehovah's Witnesses.
Jehovah's Witnesses would count. But aside from them, I don't think there are a lot of people who wouldn't do it because they believe their religion forbids it.
Isn't there some famous Jehovah's Witness that just died? Sorry.
God. There's somebody trying to avoid this issue.
Hey, I'm staying away. I'm staying away.
Oh, yeah, sure you are.
So I marked a bunch of... When email comes in, I tend to mark it in different ways so that I know how to categorize it. One of the things that I did was mark things that I was intending to read on the show. So if I've read some of these before, I apologize, but most of them I don't think we have. Hi, guys. My name is... Name intentionally left blank. I'm a big fan of the show. I'm not in Austin, so I have to watch it through web videos like YouTube and such. Anyways, you can tell by my admiration I'm essentially an atheist, weak atheist, I guess you'd say. I mean it in the agnostic sense and still maintain some of that what-if-I'm-wrong terror, but I'm working through it. The problem is I'm dating the most beautiful and intelligent girl I've ever met. It's wonderful, but there's a critical problem here. She's a devout Christian, as are her parents. Ordinarily, I wouldn't even care to bring up the issue. Live and let live, I don't mind, as long as they're not interfering with my rights or anyone else's. But she does. She cares that I'm not a Christian, she cares that I'm not a believer, and her parents are strictly against her dating me. I'm 24 and she's 21, so our parents have no sway over her life now, but she respects their opinions and wants to live up to their standards, and this worries me. I don't know how to deal with this emotionally for my own sake or for the sake of staying with her. Being that you guys understand what I believe, don't believe, I figured you must have faced this before, at least known someone who has. I've heard her go on a rant about how Easter is about Jesus, and I know the facts about its pagan origins, but I had to bite my tongue and suffer through it because I know that the religious sheet of ice between us is thin, fragile, and apparently important enough to her to destroy the relationship. How should I deal with this? Now, I already sent my reply, but I'm opening it up for you guys.
Well, if that last statement, if he really believes that last statement is true, that
it's a deal breaker?
That it is a deal breaker, then there's really nothing than get out before.
Well,
I mean,
I would never be in that situation now just because I can't respect a theist.
You wouldn't get into the situation, right?
I'm not going to date a Christian, you know, not going to happen, but I used to. And they were very conflicted about it. And the approach I often take or took was to say, well, how about this? Once every so often, set some timetable, we'll have a discussion about it. I'll bring up some of the things that are keeping me from believing, and then you can answer those. And in a way, it was very disingenuous setting her up to basically witness to me and then just deconvert her instead. But, you know, even without the deceitful motive,
right,
it might not be a bad idea to just get in these conversations, get her to question a lot of her positions, particularly if her parents are dead set against her dating you. Get her to try to pinpoint what her own reservations are, not her parents, about dating a non-Christian. Even if she stays Christian, there's a decent chance that through critical examination, she can at least get to a point where she doesn't condemn non-Christians or doesn't think less of you or things like that. But I would also say that automatically being a Christian, there's a degree of thinking less of you. I mean, that's just going to be there.
Yeah.
Well, that may not be the case for him, though.
Right.
So he's going to have to look at that himself.
When your worldviews are that different, there's going to be a hint of contempt for the other person. You know, when you hear them talking about the things, and you can't, you have to bite your tongue and roll your eyes. That's a tinge of contempt, and that's poisonous to a relationship.
There are other ways to do it, though. Just biting, fucking tongue in, almost tongue in cheek kind of cruelty. Like, just take shots at each other left and right about it.
Be hideously ironic and, about the whole thing.
And that, I mean, it provides levity, gets criticism, and that kind of thing is difficult, but it can work. It can be rather fun.
If you diffuse the seriousness of it that way.
Yeah.
That might.
You go worship your zombie carpenter, blah, blah.
How
blah.
Long you can keep that up,
you know, pretty long time. I mean, I've...
that can be really miserable, though.
I've seen a lot of writings from couples that have done it for years, and part of it depends on how serious you are about your belief and then how seriously you take that.
Yeah. Well, it sounds to me like he's going to have to kind of take some measure of several different factors. For instance, he needs to figure out how dedicated is she to pleasing her parents versus pleasing herself and the person that she chooses to be with. Because if she's more concerned about how she looks in the eyes of her parents, that's almost certainly going to kill it. I mean, that's...
But, I mean, she's 21, so she's probably very likely in that
still
phase
weaning away
of figuring out, you know, being an individual.
Yeah.
And anything that can help that along would probably make situation better, but maybe not alleviate it.
And the other measure, or another one, is what you were talking about, just having those discussions and seeing if she has the ability to think through what she actually believes and why. And if she's able, if he can do that and she starts changing, then that would be a good indication. But if she just keeps pulling into a shell and sheltering herself from any consideration, any, you know, changing anything, then it's probably not going to work.
So here's what I wrote.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're, like, all on somewhat the same page. I don't envy your situation one bit.
No.
And you're probably not going to like my advice, but it's my honest opinion. Feel free to disregard. Are you comfortable biting your tongue for the rest of your life? I couldn't be. Are you comfortable biting your tongue while your kids are indoctrinated into superstitions and ignorance? I definitely couldn't be. Are you comfortable hiding who you are and what you think for the rest of your life? I couldn't be. You'll probably be tempted to quietly hope that eventually she'll change her views. Maybe she will, maybe she won't. But I'd never recommend getting into or continuing a relationship where the goal is to dramatically change some core belief of the other person. What if she never changes her mind? What if she gets more fundamentalist? What if she works even harder at her Christianity in order to try to change you? What if she gives up her religious belief and resents you for it? What if she gives up and becomes a miserable person to be around? As a general rule, I don't date people who have views that I cannot respect. I'm not suggesting, with the exception of one argument over whether kitties are better than parrots. I'm not suggesting that everyone needs to find someone who agrees with them on everything. But if you disagree on big things, and make no mistake, this is potentially huge. You're just asking for trouble. And yes, it completely sucks. You become emotionally attached to someone who has beliefs and values that are very different, in some cases the exact opposite from yours. Here's what I recommend. It's time for a conversation. It's time for brutal honesty. It's time to sit down and be completely honest about your feelings, what you're looking forward to in the future, where you're willing to compromise, and where you aren't. It's not an impossible situation, but it's hardly ideal. If you can reach a compromise that you're both happy with, and I said happy, not begrudgingly willingly to go along, then give it a shot. If not, then break it off, have a good cry, and start looking for someone who you can be happy with.
But there is a lot to be said for resignation. Sometimes it works.
Yeah.
And the answer is cats.
It's
yeah. I mean, you're just fucking wrong. Sorry, Matt.
Beth loves all you guys now, but... It's possible to have a happy relationship that is both emotionally satisfying and rational. It may not be easy to find, but it's possible. In the end, you have to do what's right for you. If either of you start making compromises for the other, you're just building a hidden pile of issues for later resentment.
Yeah.
I sincerely hope that you figure it out with minimal pain and drama, but relationships aren't just built on love. They're also built on trust, respect, balance, consideration, and mutually beneficial compromises. I think we can add reason to that mix and see a dramatic improvement, or at least that's what I'm trying to do.
Wow.
And that right good there response, is why dude. The written word is better than a bunch of shit made up on the fly.
Yes. Yes, that was clear, concise.
Wow.
But, you know, it sounds bad when we, you know, many of us have to kind of say, no, we really can't consider having a relationship with a fundamentalist Christian.
Well, people have a hard time differentiating between...
I mean, is that intolerance or is that just, you know, it seems...
It's not intolerance.
I think it's an acceptable intolerance. There's a difference between being put off by someone with different beliefs than you mm-hmm. and being put off by someone who holds beliefs that you cannot respect. And
yeah,
when people give me shit
issue.
For saying I'm not
can't
friends,
respect them.
Yeah, I'm not friends with any Christians. They say, well, how can you do that? Are you friends with any Nazis? Would you be friends with a Nazi?
Yeah.
Now you know.
It's
a very extreme example, but it does highlight if you cannot respect that position, it's really. But I mean,
and it definitely creates an us versus them. But what else can you do?
There's also a big difference between accepting the fact that there are other people in society that you will have to deal with. You may have to interact with them, you know, doing a business transaction or things like that, versus having personal relationship.
Right, right.
Right, and then there are different contexts of personal relationships.
Right.
Like, I can have friends that do things I don't... Like, I used to have a friend who was a sex offender. He got caught fucking a kid. Not a great friend, don't really respect his choice, but that didn't have any impact on our interaction, so... I didn't deem it mm-hmm. relevant. But something like theism, where it's a position that affects so much of their life that you can't respect it. If someone is
and you
Christian
can't talk to them without
and we become friends and they never fucking let me know they're Christian, then I'd be okay with it, most likely.
Yeah. Curious.
Wow, yeah.
So I have something... This isn't going to work because of the way everybody's situated around the table. So, I've been really been wanting to do this, and I never really got around to it.
Go for
you
it.
Just want to let us know what it is.
Jerk.
Okay, there's a guy who emailed with a thought experiment.
I can't reach you.
It's basically he was. Defining terms for theism, agnosticism, and atheism.
Okay. I have mine preferred definitions for that.
He's got this deal where he flips a coin, and then he asks you if you think it's tails, if you think God exists. And I don't believe it's heads or tails is an agnostic. I don't believe it's tails is an atheist who's also agnostic. I don't believe it's head. Anyway, it was kind of confusing the way he was going through it.
It's a really crappy analogy.
Yeah, because analogies are supposed to make things easier. And I'm not saying that it necessarily makes things more difficult, but all it does is swap names with the exact same crap they could have done without the coin.
So what I brought was, first of all, the analogy is flawed. While fair coin toss has two equally likely results, the issue of whether or not a god exists does not have two equally likely results.
Right.
The fact that there are only two possible results doesn't mean they're equally likely. Here's a better scenario. There's a box on a table. It either has something in it or it doesn't. And then I wrote this big story that's just a conversation between a theist and atheist, and occasionally an agnostic, and I put a big note on here because I just love to piss off the agnostics, but I make sure I'm pissing off the right ones. The agnostic in this story represents a particular type of intellectual agnostic that makes assertions about the unknown and unknowable. This doesn't represent every type of agnostic. So, Thad.
Yes.
You're in the easiest position to get up.
Okay.
Come on around. Do you want to
bring my mic?
You bring your mic. We'll need an agnostic at some point, but I'll just fake a voice. Do you want to be the theist or the atheist?
I don't care. I can be either. I'll be the theist.
Okay.
I'll be the stupid.
So there you are. You go first.
I believe that the box has a leprechaun in it.
I don't believe that. Why do you?
I heard him talking.
I don't believe that either. In fact, I have no evidence that leprechauns exist.
Well, either there's a leprechaun in the box or there isn't, right?
Right.
So it's 50-50. And since I heard him talk, I'm sure that there's a leprechaun in there.
Either there's a leprechaun in the box or not, but that doesn't mean the odds are 50-50.
Of course it does.
Actually, no, but could you offer some evidence?
Hang on. He's just told me that if you don't believe he's in there, he'll chain you to a tree after you're dead and stick his up your ass for 10,000 years. Stick his something up your ass for 10,000 years.
I think there's a typo in that.
Yes.
Wow, but I was asking if you could offer some additional evidence beyond your claim that you heard him talking. I didn't hear him say that, by the way.
Well, you're not listening hard enough.
Okay, let me listen for a second. I still don't hear anything.
Give it time. You've got to sincerely want him to hear. Want to hear him.
If he's in there, I'd like to know it. I mean, I'll keep listening.
Did you hear that?
Nope, nothing.
You're either lying or you're so closed-minded that he's not letting you hear him.
Not letting me? Leprechauns can choose who can hear them?
Of course. He could open this lid, show himself to me, and you'd never see it. You'd think the box was closed the whole time. They're magic.
Well, do you have any evidence for this? I mean, I've never seen a leprechaun. I have no reason to think they exist. And every time you tell me how to prove it, the test failed.
No, you fail. It worked for me.
Well, there are other people here who have tried this too, and it failed for them.
Yes, but these people over here heard it. In fact, there are way more people over here who will tell you they heard it.
Well, I talked to some of them. They all have slightly different take on this. Some say it's a leprechaun, others say it's a fairy, others say it's a goblin. None of them describe the same voice, and they apparently have conflicting messages that they claim came from inside the box.
Ah, yes. There's actually a troll in the box with the leprechaun. He sometimes pretends to be the leprechaun, or a fairy, or a goblin, in order to fool those other people. But you'll notice they still heard something.
Well, yes, so they say, but others didn't.
Well, that troll sometimes blocks the sounds, so people can't hear it.
So, how do you know when you hear the leprechaun that you aren't hearing the troll?
Don't be absurd. The leprechaun is my friend. He makes sure that I only hear him.
Yeah, but how can you be sure? If you think there's a troll there, too, who pretends to be a leprechaun, how can you know? Maybe there's only the troll, and he's just fucking with you.
Now you're just being thick. Look, there's a box, right?
Yep.
Now, why would there be a box here unless there was something in it? There must be something in it, right?
No, the box could be empty.
No, it couldn't, or there'd be no reason for the box to exist. Boxes are for holding things. We all know that.
So you're claiming that the box could not possibly be empty?
Correct.
And you don't see that as a flawed premise?
No, and it's confirmed by the fact that I heard a leprechaun.
Well, how did you hear him?
He talks to me telepathically.
So you didn't mean to listen with my ears, you meant listen with my mind?
Your heart.
That doesn't listen.
Your metaphoric heart.
Okay, but that guy says he heard it with his ears.
He's wrong. He's hearing the troll.
But I don't even hear the troll.
He's blocking you.
Okay, how do you know all of this?
The leprechaun told me.
So you've made appeals to magic, telepathy, leprechauns, trolls, and non-empty boxes, and you've offered no evidence. I'm sorry, but I don't believe you.
Don't forget the shillelagh.
What? Right. And you've made threats about things that'll happen after I'm dead. I guess it was the shillelagh he was going to stick up my ass. When there's no evidence that there's any me to experience anything after I'm dead, I just don't believe your claim.
What if you're wrong? Isn't that a lot to risk? He says he's got a pot of gold for you if you believe. Isn't that worth believing?
Look, even if I could make myself believe, which I can't, why would I want to do that? If there's no leprechaun in there, then I've wasted the opportunity to find out what's really in the box. And if he wants me to follow his instructions...
Oh, he does. I've written them down for you. Here.
Then I'll have wasted time doing things that... Does that say do not eat poo?
Yep. Great rule, isn't it?
Yeah, but what about drop money in the box?
He's got needs, too. Pots of gold don't grow on trees.
I thought he was magic.
He is. But, well, the money is so we can tell other people what the leprechaun wants.
Well, why doesn't he tell them?
He could, but, well, he will if they're open to it. Some, like you, are fooled by the troll.
Why doesn't he get rid of the troll?
It's a mystery, but we're sure he will eventually.
Anyway, if this isn't true, then I'll have wasted a lot of time and money on something false only to avoid a threat that wasn't real.
Yeah, but what if you're wrong?
Okay, look, I'm done. I do not believe there's a leprechaun in the box.
How can you be sure?
I'm not, but I don't believe there is.
How can you say there is no leprechaun in the box?
I didn't. I said I don't believe there is one.
Same thing.
No, it isn't. However, now that I've considered and rejected your claim...
Don't do it!
I'm willing to say that I actually do believe that there is no leprechaun in that box.
No! You're making an irrational claim. You think you know everything?
No, I'm not claiming that. I am absolutely certain that there's no leprechaun in the box, but I actually believe, to some degree of certainty, that there isn't, because if there were, I'd expect there to be some evidence to support it, and investigating, and all of the investigations keep coming up empty. I'll be back with some tools. We're going to open that box.
You can't open the box.
Why not?
You just can't. It's impossible.
He's right, you know. Neither of you know what's in the box. You're both equally absurd to assert that you do know.
I didn't assert that I'm absolutely certain. I simply stated what my belief is, and it's based on the evidence, or lack thereof.
Don't be silly. You're just as dogmatic as he is.
I'm not dogmatic about this at all. I just like to open the box and find out.
The box is impervious.
How do you know?
Well, I don't. It just seems impervious.
Really? Do you have any other impervious things to compare it to?
Well, no, but I'm sure it's impervious.
If you'll forgive me, as we're essentially on the same side in that we reject his assertion...
I don't reject it. I don't reject anything.
Well, do you accept his claim?
I don't know.
You don't know whether you accept his claim?
No, I mean I don't know whether if he's right or not.
Well, neither do I, but that's not what I asked.
The box is impervious.
Well, you sound just as dogmatic about our inability to know as he does about his private communications with the leprechaun.
Now you're just being rude.
Look, I'm going to open this box.
Silly atheist.
So, I got a drill, and I managed to drill a tiny hole in this box. I mean, it's really tiny. Look, it's not impervious. I've got a little hole here. We may eventually be able to investigate this in more detail.
You switched boxes.
No, this is the box.
It's still impervious. Your little hole doesn't give you any information to support your claim.
I can continue to investigate, and so far there's no evidence to support the theist claims.
You switched boxes.
No, I didn't.
Then, he's hiding. He needs you to believe without seeing him, so he's hiding.
That makes no sense.
The troll has created an illusory hole that is providing you with false information about what's in the box.
That might be possible. I really couldn't say.
No, I bet you couldn't. So what happens here is the theist walks away to tell other people about the leprechaun in the box. And the agnostic tries not to be anywhere near either one of them while secretly keeping an optimistic eye on the atheist's activities. And the atheist goes about his life occasionally finding new ways to investigate the box, but he tries to enjoy his life while preventing the theist from ruining it by imposing the leprechaun's rules on everybody.
What's wrong with not eating poo? I don't...
You throw in a chupacabra, and I think you got something.
It's, you know.
Look at all the good things that leprechauns have done.
Trees. Look at the trees. They're used to make shillelaghs.
Well, Warwick Davis did all right, except for those last two or three movies.
So was I playing the part of Ray Comfort?
To some extent. I did not assign any particular ideologies
particular voice to
three or personalities to
three. At least one line made me think.
Maybe. What about the banana?
Here's
so
one.
Banana up your butt. All eternity.
Here's one I might have touched on. It is not the question of God, but the affects that seeing authority externally. I'm reading this verbatim, so I apologize. God has never been proved to be a man, and its symbolism in authority is the issue to human perception as it creates a need to measure the illusion of an image. That is the real meaning in the metaphors of Adam, Eve, Cain, Abel. It is also an unknown fact that Jesus, if he ever existed, was teaching about human perception. Christianity misses the whole point and worships the cross rather than learning the teachings, which are in fact a science to our duality of perception. Reason and logic is what he was really teaching. It is nature that we all possess, and knowledge is intuitive when there is no need to measure the illusions of self-perception. Judgment in society is based upon the illusion of ego, which relates to quantum physics and reality tunnels. The Bible, read in the proper context, is a science, but most religion symbolizes authority in God. God does not exist, but we all share the same natures in our duality of mind. There is good reason for religion, because when we die, our energy still has an impression upon it. Based upon the illusion of self-perception, there is such a place as the fifth dimension of time, space, where we go, but this will be revealed to humanity on December 21st, 2012.
Well, it's words strung together. That what the crazy. Hell does Damn that mean?
I actually
reality tunnels.
I followed it completely. It just didn't lead anywhere.
Yeah, I saved that one so that I on December 22nd, 2012, I can read that.
Ah,
again.
All right. That will be the time the universe has not ended. Yes, good.
Wow, well, managed to bring quantum physics into
one that. Contributor was definitely a sophomore philosophy major.
Mm-hmm. Loves that duality word, boy.
Well, there were a lot of just,
and
buzzwords.
And the illusion of images of, or images of illusions of.
Yeah, bringing the shadows on the cave walls, but I doubt he understands the reference.
So let's go to these are ones I haven't even read yet.
To be fair, that guy may know something we don't, because he has the ability to masturbate with both hands on the keyboard.
Good point.
So I haven't read these. I don't know whether these are good or not. I'm going to skip that.
I've got one here.
Go ahead.
This is brought to us by Gregory, who discovered that, remember the Left Behind game?
Yeah, yeah.
They made a sequel.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious about it, though, because as I understand it, a good developer bought up the rights to the sequel. And I don't know if the sequel is supposed to be any better or not.
If you're curious about it, you want to look it up on the web, turn off your sound.
Yeah.
Because
I
went to the website, the music started playing, and I lost the will to live. And so I I couldn't get any further.
Oh, no, I clicked it, but I'm much more of a masochist.
What was it, that contemporary Christian kind of
crap? It was awful, whatever the hell it was.
Think Amy Grant squared. And that's kind of where you're heading.
I'm not sure how to square it.
And that was at work, so it wasn't really welcome.
Yeah, I'm curious, because even if they made a propaganda-laden bullshit game that had decent gameplay, it might still be fun.
Yeah, it's possible, but I will have to take more of that bullet and find out what the heck that.
Why I look, because it's out, but I haven't found any reviews of it. Because it's I'm not into real-time strategy games at all. They bore shit out of me.
I can't play them.
But from what I understand, the company that bought the rights has made a good franchise that people love. So,
and actually, I'm kind of in favor of that, because that just confuses their theologies even more.
Yeah. And playing a, murderous, playing a Christian who goes out and murders lots of people is like, well, gosh, I don't know. Should that make anyone think? Might. Just might.
So, I haven't gone through a lot of my email. I'm going to make some, there are people who just aren't going to get answers. Despite my objections and my claims that, we don't have time to answer all of them, but we do read them all, I haven't gotten around to reading them all yet. There's 280-something left in my inbox that I read. But I've always made an effort to try to make sure that everybody who writes gets some kind of answer. Now, if they keep writing over and over again, they don't necessarily get an answer. I'm going to have to impose some new rules, though. I don't know everything. For real. I don't even know. I don't have the Bible memorized.
I don't.
So sometimes when people write a question, specifically one related about Bible or Christianity, what I end up doing is going out, because I don't have all this shit necessarily memorized, and I'll do a quick Google search to either find the answer or remind myself of, where that is in the Bible and whatever else. If I can answer your question in less than a minute's Google search, I'm not answering your letter.
because you could have done
it. Because you could have done it
Google
too.
Search.
Maybe it took you more than a minute, but sorry, I'm not. I have so much email and so many other things I'd like to be doing with my time, and occasionally I'd like to, do
there
stuff.
There are many online Bibles.
Yeah. So I think it's that some people just really don't realize maybe what all you can do with a search engine, because I've literally taken the question that they've written on occasion and cut and pasted that question into Google, and the answer is in the first, handful of results. Somebody emailed the other day, and I'm not going to pick out anybody in particular. I'm not mad at you or anything else, but they were asking where I was looking for a quote in the Bible that says the earth is flat, but I never found one. Now, if you Google Bible flat earth, you will find a number of websites that list all the different passages that are interpreted as if the Bible talks about a flat earth. Mm-hmm. You've got passages about the four corners and pillars and fixed in space, but one of the bigger ones, which I know there are Christians out there listening, and I know that you've all got your own interpretation of this, and you say this has nothing to do with a flat earth, but there's the passage in Daniel that talks about the tree that grows that can be seen from everywhere on earth. Now, maybe that's a metaphor. I don't know. I don't know that there's context in there to actually, sort it all out. It's not so much that the Bible necessarily states under every possible interpretation that the earth is flat. It's that it doesn't give an accurate picture by any stretch of the imagination of the physical description of the earth and the solar system and the universe and the cosmos in general.
One, knowing that people believed the earth was flat, God took no opportunity to say, oh yeah, by the way, it's round.
Yeah.
That might come in handy.
Yeah, and the closest they get is to talking about the earth as a circle. And then they say, oh no, they meant round. It's just those people back then didn't understand it. Okay. The twisting and turning that goes on, making apologies for an all-knowing God who revealed cryptic information evidently to people who couldn't understand it in languages that were going to die out in such ways that over the course of the millennia, we no longer have a good reason to think that we understand what any of these passages might really have been talking about. Anybody who's dumb enough to do that doesn't deserve a God title. If I have an important message for all of humanity, and I write down things like, or inspire people to write down phrases that I know are going to be interpreted widely differently a couple thousand years in the future, don't I have some responsibility to come back with like a 2.0 version or an update? Or
yeah.
Oh, no. Well, now that, if he's willing to give information to these people, why not give it to everybody? And the special pleading that goes on saying, he revealed it in the language and understanding of the people at the time. Really? How hard would it have been to say, instead of telling people how much they could pay for slaves and who they can enslave and how much they could beat them, how hard would it have been just to say, slavery's wrong? I don't know that a sphere is such a difficult concept to understand.
I think they understood ball.
Not necessarily. It's not like the Earth's a real
sphere. One of those handful of cases, though, where I think it would largely come down to original language and what the concept of sphere, circle,
but you
ball.
Didn't have to go anywhere near sphere. You didn't have to go anywhere near mathematical. The Earth is like an apple.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What I'm saying, though, is the people who want to interpret circle as meaning sphere.
Yeah.
That's something where original language, I think, would be pretty necessary. The sheer amount of useful information that God just doesn't care to give out, and like the slavery thing, he could just say, don't do it. And the argument I get from Christians on that is, that was really progressive for the time. So God showed himself to these people. They fucking knew it was true. And if he said don't do it, they fucking secede from reality at that point? They're not going to go to hell. Like, choose to own slaves knowing they'll go to hell. If God presented himself and everyone knew for a fact he existed and he said no slaves, by and large, That's all it would take.
Yeah.
You don't need baby steps.
And it's not as if there aren't a few examples of pretty straightforward commands, like thou shalt not kill.
Yeah. But reinterpret it.
Thou shalt not murder. Right. To be fair, though, I think there's reasonable grounds for that particular passage.
Oh, sure.
To say that it obviously intended murder and not just killing, because when it's followed by instructions, the thing is when you
have a slaughtered all livestock,
animals and stuff. Right. Of course. When you and those people who don't agree with you, kill the infidels. I mean, it's in the Quran and it's in the Bible. Kill the infidels. It just doesn't not this exact same phrasing, but. And now I forgot what I was going to say.
When also kill applies to accidental action.
Yeah. This idea that it originally said murder, that's never been a big deal for me. I'm fine with that kind of stuff. I think that for most things, the best course of action is to take them at face value. Now, in certain areas where you've got particularly colorful language that you can understand is supposed to be
metaphor
or allegory or something along those lines, then that's fine. But you have to admit that you may not have the perception and understanding of the audience at the time that it was written to even know what this might possibly truly be about. But when you're given a big instruction manual, you can find things that seem to conflict. I mean, if you look through U.S. laws, you might find something that would almost seem to conflict until you read in great detail. And there's a general principle that the general rules are superseded by the specific rules, that you begin with something simple like do not kill or do not murder. And then you get into the specifics that define what murder is and when killing someone is or isn't murder. There's a reason why, for example, the U.S. Penal Code is huge in its description of different types of acts, of whether it's first-degree murder, second-degree murder, manslaughter, involuntary manslaughter, and all the different cases and scenarios that go through there. This is a true, useful, specific kind of list of do's and don'ts, but it's law.
One of the other things that makes it much more useful and makes biblical dict kind of it undermines the hell out of it is when you write law or instruction, you try to avoid being ephemeral with it. The treasurer Alan Greenspan doesn't come out and say, all right, our bling rate this year is going to be this. They don't determine law using fucking idioms. They use
right
language that is technical. Going to be they try precise, to make it as permanent as possible. If God really thought the best way to get the message out was through fucking riddles and stories and idioms that those people there would understand, and fuck every culture that comes after that for several other millennia.
Well, it shows, to me, it shows the narrow perspective of a particular small group of people that did not have the long view.
Right.
That did not think that anybody else... I mean, if you think that you're God's chosen people and God's given you this information, as long as you understand it, that's all that matters. There wasn't in the mind of, for example, the ancient Israelites, the idea that their God applied to everybody and that these rules apply to it. I mean, it was the exact opposite of that. And at that time, there probably wasn't even the notion that that their language could significantly change or die out.
Right.
Even if they had encountered other languages that die out at that point, you would think that the first reaction would be, God smited them and wiped them away. But we're specifically chosen. We are this kind of, septic closure. Antiseptic closure, I guess, and we're going to be safe and protected and static.
Right.
Now, here's an email that I'm just going to read for fun. You guys are so informative and knowledgeable. I honestly can hardly wait for each new video of the Atheist Experience. Rocks. I have a fun challenge for Matt and his host du jour for the week. I challenge you guys to do an entire show here on YouTube while your bare feet or sides are being tickled. It would be wild to see how well you guys can keep your composure on cam.
That sounds fetishy.
Tickled yeah. by who?
I don't know. I'm not giving out names. I'm not answering that email.
Attractive nymphets? Okay.
Yeah, just say that, you know.
But some burly guy? Nah, that's a little too weird for me.
Oh, there's been a big discussion about whether or not this guy who called into the TV show 2 weeks ago was or wasn't Venom Fang X.
Oh, my. Really?
A guy called into the TV show, said his name was Patrick, I think from Roanoke, Virginia. And Martin and I sat here, and neither one of us, you know, suspected that it was Venom Fang X. And after the show was over, Russell and some other people said, that was Venom Fang X. So we put the DVD in and played it back. And as I listened to the voice, the more it sounded like him. I no longer think that this was Venom Fang X. I've listened to more of it.
Patrick could speak
yeah.
reasonably well.
And he was pleasant. But that was what struck me right off the bat, is that the attitude and the demeanor and everything was completely different. I'm not saying it couldn't be. I have no idea. I don't think that there's enough evidence to say that it was, and some other people have listened to it, you know, more than once and said it wasn't.
But you might explain who Venom Fang X is.
No, I might not.
I would say, similar to why I say there was no Jesus.
Do a Google search.
That essentially it's not Venom Fang X, because if that's the same guy, it's pretty clear that one of them is essentially a character.
Yeah.
I mean, Jesus did not exist. Could have had some basis on a real guy, but when you narrow down what defines Jesus, what components are necessary for it to be Jesus, you know, resurrection, right. miracles, shit like that, yeah. didn't fucking happen. You know, just like Leatherface doesn't exist. He was based on Ed Gein. You know, having basis in reality, when you look at the core tenets, what defines Leatherface goes well beyond...
Yeah,
the sure. small truth value.
So for those who are curious, Venom Fang X is some kid on Yahoo who did a bunch of Christian apologist, anti-atheist videos until he violated the Digital Millennium Copyright Act and got in a little potential legal trouble with another YouTube user. Mm-hmm. And then his mom and dad shut down his website.
And he caved.
Supposedly.
And read an apology
yeah.
on YouTube, which was
yeah, it,
staggering.
He's nothing at all. If it's the same person, congratulations. In one of those two cases, either as your Venom Fang X character or as your Patrick from Roanoke character, you have managed to dupe people. So kudos.
Yeah, I saw that call, and that was a really good call. You know, exactly the kind of call that we like to see from theists, where it's a lot of asking questions. And, you know, they will say, well, I'll have to think about that for a while, instead of just hopping to the next apologetic or things like that.
Yeah.
So,
I don't know, did you get my email on that show? Because there was a point that I emailed you about on that show, where you were talking about was it Paul's conversion on Road to Damascus?
Yeah,
yeah, and how he'd been this murderer, and the fact that he was a murderer and had some notoriety influenced God to intervene and convert him, because a figure like that would be much more powerful. And then there was an exchange back and forth of, you know, why doesn't he convert Dawkins or something like that. And I think a pretty valid question is, why not Ayatollah Khomeini or Osama bin Laden? Men who are known for nefarious acts and have shitload of... I mean, if the Christian God converted Khomeini and bin Laden on the same day, that'd probably make a hell of a lot more difference than Paul ever could have.
Yeah, I mean, granted, we would all be of the opinion that any difference it would make would be a fallacy. That, you know, these people's personal experiences that led them to change their religious views aren't my personal experiences.
Yeah, it wouldn't influence atheists.
But I would have to say that if tomorrow the Ayatollah Khomeini and Osama bin Laden came forward and had, you know, gave a press release where they described an experience where Jesus appeared to both of them and explained things, and they've changed their religion, and then, you know, they proceeded from there and began a reform in their respective, you know, regimes and everything else, I have no idea what I'd say. That is the type of thing that you'd have to take pause to say, yeah, wow, what happened here? Something.
That's a data point and a big one.
Well, I wouldn't consider any truth value in it for a second. It'd make me curious as to what the motivations were. But, you know, it wouldn't convert atheists, but think of what it would do to their followers.
No, it would not. It would not. That alone would not convert me. But what it would do, it would be the type of thing that would certainly give me pause and make me want to investigate further to find out what went on. Because clearly something happened.
Right.
Now, whether or not it was, you know, there could be the two of them in collusion to, you know, some other super nefarious act or whatever.
Yes.
But it would open up the question for much more significant investigation. And, you know, if you think that, it's so silly to think that's roughly what God did with Saul Paul.
Yeah, one of the things that you know, you pointed out with Dawkins is, if God did that to Richard Dawkins and converted him tomorrow, that's not going to dent. I mean, there might be three or four people who are really into him who will convert and, you know, don't really listen to what the man says. But just the nature of his position and the nature of how people know him, converting Dawkins would get God nowhere. You would need people who already have dogmatic followers who will basically lockstep behind them.
Yeah. It would be the time thing. People often ask, you know, well, what kind of evidence would you need? That wouldn't be enough. But that would be enough to make me begin reconsidering things and investigating some things in a different way. It's not that I've, you know, tossed out the possibility. I'll freely admit that, you know, for the most part, what Christians or other theists assert seemed just patently absurd to me and so wholly unsupported. But that's because every investigation into the claims leaves you so laughably wanting that it's...
Well, I mean, there are some subsets of conversion that do warrant more criticism. If every Christian tomorrow became a Muslim, you almost suspect maybe they found out something we don't know, kind of thing.
Yeah, and we'd be seriously fucked.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, that type of thing, you know... Martin has given an example, and I've used it, and I think others have. For example, you know, God writing something in the sky, and you know, in some type of language that everybody could simultaneously understand, something that would be a clear miracle that violates, you know, the natural order. I don't know that converting bin Laden and Khomeini on the same day would qualify as a miracle. Maybe pretty damn close.
Well, I mean, just aside from using it as a direct comparison to Paul's conversion, using his influence to bring people to Christianity, Khomeini and bin Laden both, like either of them, they have that level of influence that it wouldn't, you know, have a massive worldwide effect, but it sure as shit impact Iran.
Yeah.
You know, it'd bring a hell of a lot of people to Christianity. And cause a pretty big ripple.
Except that what it would also do is all the people that would convert because of that, it would demonstrate that they don't have a real belief. They don't have any real...
That's never been a problem for Christians.
No. What it's talking about is it would be a testimony to people's propensity to follow authority
Right.
Rather than concern themselves with whether or not it's true.
But what I'm saying is God's goal would presumably be net number of Christians. Not full-on, you know, demonstration to the world type thing, but if he's going to convert someone to lead people to Jesus, those would be pretty guys to pick if you just want the highest numbers.
Yeah. My big thing, though, is still that if you are, let's say, Thad is God. Hi, Thad.
Hi.
And his goal is to have some type of relationship with everybody. If Thad had only ever talked to Dennis, that does you and I no good. And if Dennis keeps telling us about Thad, that does us no good. And even if there was somebody down the street who was a rabid anti-Thad person who had killed supporters of Thad before, who suddenly converts and comes in and wants to tell you and I about Thad, that still doesn't make any difference. If Thad's true goal is to get to know everybody, mm-hmm. then it's his responsibility to come talk to me and you and everybody else.
But you are calling me a liar. You're so rude. You're so strident.
Well, suck it down.
So God is like when you have a girlfriend, but she goes to school in Canada?
Yes.
What?
You don't know her. She goes to another school. Yeah.
Wow.
You could get to know her if you just went to...
No. We'll be meeting God in a couple of hours.
A little passage that I thought was really good.
Yeah.
Out of a mail we got from Jim. He's talking about weird experiences and how they're interpreted. I like this one. He says, I play drums in a rock band for fun, and I've decided I need to help the global financial crisis by buying a new set of drums. Anyway, I was busy setting them up, all excited, when I dropped my tuning key, a small key a few centimeters across used for setting up and tuning the drums, something that drummers always lose. I watched it bounce to the floor and under my kick drum pedal. I got down on my hands and knees and found the key under the pedal resting on the pedal base plate. However, it was sitting perfectly in a drum key-shaped rubber hollow. It had fallen into a special spot designed by the kick pedal designers to store the drum key. He says, I was amazed. The key holder was a clever and useful design, and I only found it because I accidentally dropped my drum key and it fell in it. I have a mathematics degree, and I knew this was not impossible, but certainly improbable. However, I was quite excited about how I discovered the secret storage place. The odds were very low, and so I knew it would make a great story to share about how I found it. And I want you to pause here and ask yourself what assumption you personally would have drawn from that experience. Same as me? Because a while later, while I was packing up the drums and found a drum key on the floor, it was the one I dropped. The rubber hollow already had another spare key placed in it by those very clever kick pedal designers. Now I, a very scientifically minded person, automatically assume the incredibly high odds of it falling perfectly into its mold hypothesis, rather than the very obvious spare key already in place hypothesis. In both cases, I jumped to the less probable, way less probable conclusion.
Yeah, that was actually one of the favorite emails I've gotten in the last year.
How easy it is to misinterpret a mundane event.
Part of the reason for that, though, is I think that it's nearly ubiquitous in the sense that all of us have either experienced or know somebody who's experienced something that is just about as improbable as dropping the key and having it fall into the slot that's designed for it. You know, anybody who's done things like board games, you know, where you need to roll boxcars to get that winning move, otherwise you're going to lose and, you know, whatever, and it happens, you want to attribute some significance to that because there's a significance after the fact for you, and there was a significance beforehand, it just happened to occur. But things like where you've the die has rolled off the table, and it, you know, on a perfectly wooden floor, and it bounced twice and landed directly into a shoe. You know, something that if you could have sat there at the table and rolled for a day and not get it to fall directly into the shoe. Yeah, you know, when you see things like that, and we're so bad at estimating how likely something is to occur in the first place, even those of us who are pretty good about estimating, and I'm not one of them, the likelihood of something happening.
Well, and it's because we're looking at it after the fact. So it looks highly improbable, but if you take into account the number of events that happen of a similar nature across the entire world
even aside from any time, like the key thing, roughly equal, I'd argue almost maybe more, it depends on the shape of the pedal and everything like that, it's as likely to fall there as it is to fall anywhere.
Yeah. No, I think the thing to take away from this is a quote that I heard ages and ages ago, which is, a conclusion is the point at which you stopped thinking. Mm-hmm. He found the key.
Right.
And no matter how improbable it was, there it was. Mm-hmm. That must be it. And really, he hadn't found what he was looking for at all.
It's also an excellent example of having a limited set of hypotheses that you consider and not thinking of an additional hypothesis.
Yeah. I mean, it would have been, you know, somebody who was, you know, we talk about skeptics all the time. And this person's obviously a skeptic, a rational thinker, mathematician, a fan of the show, emailed us, et cetera. But, yeah, it's some people would claim that skeptics are just so cynical. It might be the case that the person, after finding the drum key in the recess built for it, the person who said, nope, that's so improbable, I don't believe it, and then keeps looking to find the real drum key that they dropped, that might actually be an overly skeptical person. Because essentially, they found what they're looking for. They, you know, okay, as improbable it is, you know, this appears to be it. So is the person who keeps looking acting rationally or not, whether or not they find a key?
That particular situation, I think it could be a toss-up.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends on what conclusion you draw. I mean, if you didn't know the key slot was there, you know, it's the kind of thing where seeing that key slot there with the tuning key in it, it's pretty likely that if they're going to build that slot, they might throw in a tuning key. So I think it would be completely justified to do a quick glance over, but not, you know, a scouring search once you see it.
Yep.
So it depends quite a bit on the specific context, but there are a lot of situations like that.
And what about the person who continues looking even after they found the key in the socket? Yeah. And how long do they keep searching before they give up and realize that, or think, be convinced that they found the right key? And what about the guy who says, it's so improbable that the key fell into that slot, that they take the kick pedal apart looking, for example, if there's a magnet that holds, you know, that might have attracted it to help it make it more likely that it falls in there. And even if they'd have found a magnet, it's still the case that it's a different key than the one he dropped in the first place. Yeah, it's an email that provoked a lot of thought. And, you know, brought a smile to my face as well, because it tells us so much about not only the world around us, but about who we are.
Right.
And, it really is that the conclusion is a place where you stopped asking questions type thing. Yeah.
So and then what are the odds of a drummer who tunes?
And then seeing if we had one here, he could have done a rim shot right then.
There's the true believer who, after the second key has been found, still insists that the key that was in there was the original one that was dropped.
Yeah, yeah. that the second key they found fell off of the backside of one of their drums.
Right.
Yeah.
Or the person who thinks that they found the key because God didn't want them to waste time looking for the other key. You know.
Oh, I used to love that when I used to hang out in churches, Satan would hide their Bible. And they'd search for like 10 minutes, and it was always that Satan hid it. But so they would pray while they're, you know, storming around the church looking for it, and Satan, the sneaky fucker, always hid it where they were sitting about 20 minutes ago. Every time
I did a naughty thing this last week, I found myself in a hotel room.
Uh oh,
and there was
Can you talk about this in the air?
I checked the drawer, and there was a Gideon's Bible.
Yeah.
And another Bible.
Mormon.
Mormon, yeah.
Book of Mormon.
So what I did was I interleaved the pages.
Oh, that's awesome.
And they became inseparable.
Did you use glue?
No, you don't need to. Oh. You can't pull them apart once you've interleaved their pages and stuff like that.
You pretty much have to go page by page.
It took about 5 minutes of just, you know, I wasn't careful in one, but I just fluttered the pages together and it made them real thick, but boy, you couldn't pull those two books apart after that.
Well, I think there are two trends that might be overlapping a bit. Fewer hotels are allowing the Gideons to throw Bibles in there.
Mm-hmm.
More hotels are providing condoms in the drawer.
Really? I haven't seen any of those. That's interesting.
Yeah. And what's nice is if that overlaps nicely.
Oh, no.
What? You can protect people from the Bible.
Yes.
Yeah. If I find a Bible and a condom in the drawer in the hotel when I get to Vegas, that Bible's getting wrapped.
Yes.
You know, I mean, that's an outstanding idea, is to put condoms in hotel rooms. Because
ribbed for her pleasure, wrapped for your protection.
Yep.
Or his pleasure, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I needed some porn, so I read the Bible.
You wrap the Bible in the condom, and then you pump, 60 quarters into the little machine when you leave so that the bed's vibrating no matter when the cleanup crew comes in. And the Bible's just sitting there on the pillow in the condom.
Expensive, but well-meaning.
So in the completely ill-prepared episode.
Yes.
I'm just digging through
emails and stuff.
Evidently, Jack Chick Publications has been listed as a hate group.
Really? By who?
Southern Poverty Law Center.
Wow. Somebody noticed.
Also, if you haven't heard, the Westboro Baptist Church now officially hates Jews as well, and they have two new songs on their website. One is Studio produced with Unintentional Irony to the music of Come Together, and the other to the music of Hey Jude. Oh, boy.
Now, beware. This is not Landover Baptist.
Yeah, no.
This is Westboro Baptist. These are real.
It's
they didn't have enough people to hate yet.
I'll almost say this: it's about time someone did. To a degree, a lot of Christians, their beliefs are in a lot of opposition to Jews, but they don't say anything. They'll rail about Muslims, but they take it very easy on the Jews out of some residual, need to feel guilt.
Yeah.
And so I do see a lot of Christians taking it easy on Jews. And while I don't condone anti-Semitism or, what Westboro Baptist is doing, at least they're being upfront about what they believe.
Right.
Rather than a lot of the, I'm sure a lot of Christians share the same views on Jews as they do.
I got an article about another one doing that. And the article is kind of about imprecatory prayer. It says, ever since Pastor Wiley Drake declared not once but three times on national radio that he was praying for the death of President Obama, he has been trying to clarify. Yes, he really does want God's might. Obama. No, it's not a person prayer. Yes, it's in the Bible, he says. And no, he wasn't kidding. He's deadly serious.
All right.
And I'm going, if God exists, he's guilty of conspiracy to commit murder.
Right.
At the very least. If anything unusual actually happens to Obama.
Well, he would not be guilty of conspiracy in that case.
Why not?
Because
conspiring with another being to commit a murder.
Not necessarily. If I go to you and say, hey, Dennis, you want to rob a bank? You're not automatically conspiring unless you contribute. Now,
the guy who just
shot the abortion doctor, that was a completed act.
Hang on. People have been arrested for conspiracy to commit murder when they contacted who they thought was a hitman, but was actually a police officer.
Right.
So the hitman never existed.
Right.
That doesn't matter. You still get hauled to court.
They have contributing actions.
Like what?
Like God, if someone prays.
The praise, the prayer is the contributing action.
No, that's no contributing action on God's part. God's not automatically guilty of conspiracy. The guy is.
And I'm not sure that prayer.
The guy is guilty of conspiracy to commit murder, yes.
I think you said God was.
No. The person offering the prayer is guilty of conspiracy to commit murder.
Okay, that makes a hell of a lot more sense.
Yeah, sorry about that. I didn't make that clear.
Yeah. Except that it's... I think it tells a little bit more about, you know, how we view our laws and reality and such, in the sense that no court would ever convict them.
Oh, yeah, no, of course not.
Because on some level, they all know he wasn't really talking to anybody.
The same, maybe. It's the same reason that people don't, the football players don't really believe in God. Otherwise, they're all praying to cheat.
Yeah.
To have an extra supernatural man on the field helping their team.
Well, not if they're praying for God's will to be done.
No, they're still cheating at football.
No, they're just saying God's will be done.
I'm a hockey man. Never heard that word on the ring.
Yep.
No. And I meant to mention this last time. I am a hockey fan, so I was watching a lot of the finals. And it is great.
There was no God.
They
nobody pointing
they get
up.
The athletes after they win a game. Yeah, we worked really hard. When I started out, I was playing hockey with this guy. He taught me a hell of a lot. And it's just this very direct gratitude to people who fucking earned it. And there was not once did I see any religious inclusion anywhere. Not from fans, not from players, nobody.
That's cool.
So we got an interesting question that I'm going to open up for y'all to probably close us out.
Yep.
Though we'll see. There's a website called the First Church of Atheism. Hmm. And I'm going to read directly from their about page so that we're not misrepresenting anything.
Okay.
The First Church of Atheism was born out of necessity, created by Paul and Jackie McMaster. The FCA is the first society of its kind, dedicated solely to ordaining atheists so that they, too, may perform ceremonies previously performed by religious men. When Paul and Jackie were wed, they hired a non-denominational minister to perform the ceremony. They requested that the ceremony be entirely faith-neutral, as they were both devout atheists. To their dismay, the ceremony that the minister submitted for their approval was littered with references to and direct statements about God. They pulled out a red pen and started editing, paring down the ceremony into a 2-minute-long affair. For the next year, they would laugh about that story, telling their friends about the non-denominational minister who read them their vows and... Don't do that.
Oh, sorry about that.
They can hear it. Who read them their vows in a Friar Tuck shirt, complete with collar. While funny, this also says something tragic about the state of our society when it comes to atheists. Non-denominational means generally Christian. For atheists, this is impossible to accept. So the couple decided to form a society to provide others with what they did not get for their wedding. What we believe. This is their profession of faith. The First Church of Atheism is formed around the belief that science and reason dictate all natural life. We aim to provide a place for atheists to become ordained for free, as well as a hub for atheists to find ministers to perform their ceremonies. This is our doctrine. Quote, nothing exists besides natural phenomena. Thought is merely a function of that natural phenomena. Death is complete and irreversible. We have faith solely in humankind, nature, and the fact of science. End quote.
Whoa.
Some flubs.
This is good up until the end there.
I don't think there's necessarily anything too egregious there. Some sloppy word choice. A little bit.
They had their cart squarely before their horse, talking about science and stuff dictating
nature
and stuff, and when it's the other way around. I mean, science is descriptive, not prescriptive. But yeah.
So
also, there already exists a way for people to have completely faith-neutral services, and my wife and I did it.
Well,
it's not always easy to find. Availability.
Actually, it was really easy.
Well, like, you can always go to a JP.
No, we didn't want a JP. So there's the Universal Life Church.
Right.
Which I'm ordained through.
So am I. And so is a friend of mine, at my request, so however, that he could perform the ceremony.
However, if you actually read the Universal Life Church stuff, I might not actually qualify, because the ordination says some specific things about what you're supposed to believe. It's neutral, but it does represent some form of theism. I'll pull up the ULC thing later.
For atheists in particular, like, you can always ask. Like, I had Matt perform our marriage.
Right.
You can, in some situations, ask a friend to get this cheap-ass ordination, things like that. But it's not always conveniently available. You know, if you don't have a friend, you could contact them and know what you're getting. Because ULC, a lot of people who even know that it's out there, they don't necessarily know what that means. Does that mean neutral? Does that mean atheist? You know, and I think it's good to provide clear, we'll do marriages with absolutely no religious aspect. And that's something that I don't think necessitates a church type thing, but I could see maybe, you know, at some point, if ACA wanted to do something like that, I think it would make sense is provide, you know, contact information for places that will do, religiously, or I guess any activity without religion, you know, childhood type things, marriages, shit like that.
So here's my take.
Yeah.
And I'm probably going to be more harsh than anybody else. I think they're performing a service that's probably needed, may not be quite as needed as they suspected. And on that front, I commend them. They're not only helping to get people legally ordained to perform marriage services, but they're also providing a way for people to get in contact with those people. This is something that is a real benefit to people who would like to have a secular service. They're not the only ones doing this, by the way. Unless I'm much mistaken, I think the Council for Secular Humanism has something akin to this. Although I understand everybody's not comfortable with it. Here's where I have problems. First of all, they called it the First Church of Atheism. Mm-hmm. It's a big disservice to start adopting specific terms as if you're adopting them on behalf of atheists or atheism when there is no ism there.
Right.
It portrays the idea that atheism is in some way just another religion when it's the antithesis of religion. I understand kind
when
of the
something
how
like
and
that
why.
Could be solved by just flipping it around. Like a church of atheism, that says something about atheism. An atheistic church just says something about the church without necessarily pawning off on atheism. And I think the impression would still be there that would mislead people, but just directly, an atheistic
simple
church.
Word order. That's good.
That, you know, a Buddhist monastery is often an atheistic church.
So I think they, in their statements of belief, granted they're entitled to believe whatever they like.
Sure.
I think they go further than I would, and I'm only saying this for clarity. They say the First Church of Atheism is formed around the belief that science and reason dictate all natural life. I agree with Dennis. It's actually the inverse. We aim to provide a place for atheists to become ordained for free, as well as a hub for atheists to find ministers to perform the ceremonies. That I'm fine with. Their doctrine, nothing exists besides natural phenomena. There's a difference between philosophical naturalism and methodological naturalism, and one is the second one is a practical assumption out of necessity, and the other one is an assertion that one can accept axiomatically, and appears they do. I think this particular statement of faith, I'm not even going to object to the word faith in there, because I think it applies to what they're saying.
Right.
That they're
right.
taking this on faith, that this is true. I don't have any faith. I don't have that faith.
Right.
Right.
I operate much more practically with methodological naturalism. I am convinced to some degree that, you know, until other evidence comes along, that this is the way things are. And I would agree. I am currently convinced that death is complete and irreversible, with some fudge factors. I mean, obviously we can, you know, pull out the paddles and resuscitate people. But by what they're probably talking about, I probably agree. But I wouldn't assert that as anything remotely approaching my doctrine.
Right.
I don't have doctrine
right.
in that sense.
An arbitrary thing thrown in there. It's kind of weird.
But by and large, I'm happy that the service exists. But this to me, we had a big discussion this week on my Facebook thing about gay marriage, because I posted this funny little thought map. And some of the questions that came up involved, you know, well, you know, I'm all in favor of civil unions. As a matter of fact, people were saying, I want civil unions for everybody. The government should be out of the marriage business. And the thing that I pointed out was that this is a bunch of semantic bullshit. They're making an appeal to marriage, the word, as if it has some specific connotation that is necessarily religious. And in order to do that, they're making an appeal to history, the historical aspect of marriage. But we live in a society where marriage has come to mean something else. The people who, for example, object to same-sex marriages, by and large, I'm sure there are some people who would object to what I'm about to say, but by and large, they don't launch the same objections to two secular people marrying, two people getting married at a justice of the peace, two people who are irreligious being married, because that's all legal marriage and they understand the distinction. So there's no reason to change. Go ahead.
I think there may be more people, religious people, who do object to a substantial part of those. My friend who married me, his mother, when he found out about that, said that she does not consider my wife and me to be married.
Right.
But there's a difference between people who disagree with, you know, disagree that you should get married or be allowed to marry, and then disagree with the right for the state or for the state to grant you the right to have a recognized relationship.
Agreed.
I think most religious people who oppose it do still draw some level of distinction, not enough, but some, between their personal religious marriage and what the federal government and state government are going to recognize.
Your friend's mom would probably say that, okay, they may be married in the eyes of the law, but they're not married in the eyes of God.
Right.
That type of thing. And that's what we're getting to, is where there's this distinction between marriage and two different connotations. I think this, I had an argument with a couple people who were saying that, you know, we should get the government out of the marriage business and everybody should have a civil union and just leave marriage to the church.
I think I've said that before, but
I know I have.
And well, they still want the same thing as marriage from the government standpoint. They just want to call it civil unions and save the word marriage for the churches. Churches marry people. Governments have civil unions. My thing is, to me, that's semantic bullshit, because there's no reason why governments can't call it marriage. You're allowing the exact same thing, only now you're going to change the label. So from my view, we're talking about...
I misunderstood what you were saying about government getting out of marriage and doing so. I think government should have no place in relationships. No marriage, no civil union, fucking nothing from the government.
Right, you're in a different boat from the people that I'm talking about.
Right.
And I may actually be in that boat. This was something that I brought up towards the end of the discussion is, you know, whether or not there should be special treatment for people who are married or et cetera. That's a completely separate issue. But if we're operating under the assumption that the government is going to allow whatever they call it, civil unions, marriages, whatever, then who should be allowed to have those? And we were all in agreement that, you know, same-sex couples should be allowed there. So the real argument was that they were giving power to this marriage word and wanted to reserve that power for the church out of some kind of appeal to history, even though the meaning of marriage has changed in the culture that we live in. I think this First Church of Atheism plays into that to some extent, because in order to facilitate a solution to a problem that they saw, which is we want atheists to be able to marry atheists if that's what they choose, instead of just saying, okay, under the law, you can become authorized to perform ceremonies and sign marriage licenses. And we're going to create a place for you to do that and to find people who've done that. Instead, they adopted the language.
Well, no, it depends on state law. In a lot of states, you have to have religious ordination or be a justice of the peace or captain of a ship. Like, just a standard person cannot be eligible to perform a marriage in a lot of states. And I think Texas is one of them where you do have to have, if you're not a captain justice of the peace, you have to have religious ordination.
That's the aspect of this that I'm not sure about. However, even if that's the case, and I realize that they've done this perhaps based on those legal arguments, which is one thing I was going to touch on, I think that they've caved.
Sort of.
I think that the real solution is to change the paradigm.
Well, it depends on how far they're wanting to go. I mean, it could just be like a quick and dirty, we need this, this will take care of it for now. But they might not have the resources to do a lot of big social change that they would like to have happen. So, you know, essentially jerry-rig it for a little while.
Yeah. It may be the rough equivalent of a Band-Aid. The problem is that...
creating a scaffold.
This step may be undermining to the actual solution.
Right.
Right.
That's my only concern on
it. But, I mean, there is also a chance that it would almost... strengthen it to a degree.
It could be. I'm not condemning them.
Religious
I think they're
people
performing a service.
Religious people, as much as they love calling atheism a religion, they get their panties in a twist when they see something like atheist and church together. They throw a fucking conniption, and they'll be, you know, on the government's doorstep. Well, they shouldn't have the right to do this because it's only... you know, it's only God-fearing churches that should be able to ordain, and it raises the issue. And the knee-jerk reaction they have to it, the people on the fence, it gets them thinking about the issue. So it could play out either way. I think, I would say it's most likely to hurt it.
Yeah,
but there is a chance that it'll help just by raising the issue.
I'm not sure. But on that note, we've gone over our 90-minute mark, and... I'm going to give Shilling the last
word.
Give
him the last
again.
Word, man.
But before he does, I want to take a couple minutes. We have no idea when you're going to be back or on the show again or if it's going to happen. Who knows? But in all sincerity, you are a great friend, and I have greatly appreciated your contributions to this show. I've said it to a number of people. I don't know if I've actually said it to you. While we obviously disagree on some things, it's always done in a great spirit, and I appreciate probably more than most people would the fact that you have never shirked from directly challenging me, whether we were on the air, off the air, whatever. I've changed my mind about a number of different things, and while we get some emails about, you know, from people who listen to the show saying, oh, I don't like so-and-so, or I don't like so-and-so, or I like so-and-so better than so-and-so, none of that really matters. You were on the show because you were good at it and because you were particularly valuable to me, and I will miss that, and you are welcome back anytime.
Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for the opportunity to, you know, start out. I have no idea when I started. A year or two? No clue. Nope.
I don't know. I'd have to go back and look.
Yeah, no. I
think it's about a year.
I know it's been more than a year.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's been very close to 2 years.
I think it's been almost two.
Yeah, it was in the summer of the year Jeff left.
So throwing caution to the winds.
Yeah,
you get to you get the last word for today.
All right, and this is, as I said, the final installment of the nonprofits. They'll have to come up with some other name that's a lot less grandiose and sets your expectations appropriately. I hope you've enjoyed the last 90 minutes of my sheer, unadulterated magnificence, and can console yourselves for 2 weeks and get your morning over with by the time the next episode of Nonprofits is. That will be, which date was it?
July
18th, with potentially a special guest, and I presume some reports from Tam. So the song is, I don't think Matt ever told us at any point what the song is. It's whatever the fuck you heard 90 minutes ago. That's it.